I'd like to salute our military veterans. Personal foul, unnecessary roughness, return team.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Zombo Dabo.
Russ Dellinger.
And the Southern boy is going to South Bend to fight 30 degree and snow.
And SI's Pat Forty.
You got enough guys to play, figure it out. Get your ass to shoot.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And Travis Hunter won the Heisman on Saturday. This is an overreaction pod. We don't have a lot to overreact to since there's only a couple games, but mainly the Army-Navy game. But we do have the Heisman vote, and it was a lot of reaction to it.
Woo, goodness.
Visceral at times.
Visceral at times, yeah. Not happy in Boise. Oddly. Travis Hunter won it. 2,231 votes. Ashton Genty, the running back from Boise State, 2,017 votes. Genty got 309 first place votes. Excellent effort, but Hunter got 552 in first, and that carried him to the victory, closest since 2009, when Mark Ingram, the Alabama running back, bested Toby Gerhart and from Stanford, the running back, and Colt McCoy, the quarterback from Texas, and an Ndamukong Suh, the lineman from Nebraska. All four guys had over 160 votes. Suh had 161 first place votes, 203 for McCoy, 222 for Gerhart, and 227 for Ingram. Like, that was a squeaker, man.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of bit. I kind of like that. I don't like when it's just everybody agrees. So,
well, they sure don't agree this year.
Yeah.
No.
Pat, what happened? What happened? I thought, I thought they were all worthy. Both guys were worthy. Dylan Gabriel third, Cam Ward four, Cam Scataboo five.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a great year. I mean, a lot of great performances. I feel bad that Ashton Genty had a historically great year at the same time that Travis Hunter did something we haven't seen in 70 years. So, you know, that's bad luck for Ashton Genty, but I voted for Hunter. I think I've never seen in my lifetime, and I'm old, but I've never seen anybody do what he did at the level he did as consistently as he did all year long. I thought very deserving, and I'm a little surprised at the backlash that has come his way and just the voters' way. I mean, the people that seem to think this is a gross miscarriage of justice, some of them out there. But I think Travis Hunter was very deserving winner. But if Ashton Genty had won, I don't think that would have been a bad result either.
Yeah, I voted for Hunter as well. Voted for Genty second. Voted for actually Cam Ward. Ended up going with Cam Ward third. But any of those guys would have been great. I mean, Scataboo, you know, was right there. I was thinking about voting for him instead of third. I mean, it was closer in my mind when I got to vote. At the time of voting, I remember thinking it was closer in my mind than I thought. And lo and behold, the results bear that out. And I expected it to be kind of more of a blowout win for Hunter. But late in the season, when I started watching Genty more, and it was like, man, it was so fun to watch him. I can't wait in the playoffs to watch him. He's like a pinball bouncing off people. It's really fun to watch him and watch his vision. But like Pat was saying, just what Hunter did on both sides of the ball, it makes kind of the difference. I was just, you know, kind of floored with the visceral reaction. And I think maybe I shouldn't be surprised because, you know, it all goes back to Deion. Deion is a polarizing figure, and people relate, obviously, Travis Hunter to Deion Sanders. And there's let's just be honest, there's like a lot of hate. I won't say why maybe there's hate. We could probably all figure that out. But there's hate for Deion, and thus there seems to be hate for Travis. And it's unfortunate. His speech, which he said he didn't write, right? He didn't prepare anything. He just kind of came out with it. I saw maybe some reporting on Friday, like Ashton Jeanty had spent like several hours on, you know, on a speech, and they asked Travis, and Travis is like, no, I don't have any speech ready. But it was great. You know, talked about his dad in Lil Wayne. I love the part about Lil Wayne. It was awesome. it was really cool. It was great to see. It was a great night. Weird. Yeah. Weird and unnecessary kind of pushback from people.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. I thought Hunter would win early on, if, as long as he played. I think it was week two or three we made that call. Like, you know, these odds are all wrong. I just thought that story was going to be compelling. I get the Jeanty case. I mean, he's an incredible player. I think he's going to be, you know, he had to overcome. And I think maybe one of his great accomplishments was, I didn't hear a lot of like, yeah, but he's doing that at group of five. He's doing that at group of five. Put him in the SEC. Like, you watched, first of all, you watched him against Oregon, and, you know, and that, and he answered that like on week one. Or right, that was, I think that was their opener. Wasn't their opener? Second game. Yeah. Early, he answered that. And, you know, you had these long runs and stuff. But that's a great accomplishment. And I think everybody in college football who love to tell you that, you know, the only place that's good is the SEC. And then even then, used to be like, only the SEC West is really, really good. Like, you know, but now we don't have a West. But, you know, I think even these guys were like, okay, yeah, he could play for us. He'd be okay. And it's tough. Those numbers just kept getting higher and higher. We talked about a couple weeks ago to challenge Barry Sanders' cartoon numbers on a season, and he can still break them for the season. You know, over 7 yards a carry. I get it. I just don't think either of these guys deserve to be kind of pulled down. And yeah, you know,
I mean, that's I think the part that bothers me about this is it's the people that wanted Ashton Jeanty to win are trying to tear down Travis Hunter, and there's nothing to tear down. Nothing. I mean, the guy is a great player who, by all accounts, handles himself well off the field. You listen to him, he's like, he said he's not sure anybody else will be able to do what he did because they won't be as, basically, as boring as he is. He says, I don't go out, I don't party. I go home and I play video games or I do my homework. That's what I do. You know, I've never heard anybody come up with something. It's like, no, he's actually a bad kid. There's none of that. And so tearing him down seems to be a very disappointing side effect of this. And I'm sure Ross is right that there is a Deion element to this. And that's wrong too, in my opinion. You can't, you're putting your dislike of a coach onto the player. And frankly, I mean, maybe because the Deion Hunters are haters are out of ammo, right? They went 9-3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's softened this year. Like,
yeah.
He said he brought his Louis. Well, there's the Louis.
Yeah, there's the Louis.
Louis won the Heisman. There you go.
Yeah.
I feel like that's softened as everyone else is doing what he does. Yeah. And they won.
Yeah.
It's certainly going to be people. And it's fine. You don't like Coach Prime? Don't like him. It's fine. It's a sport. But don't take it out on this guy. I mean, think about Travis Hunter again. And this is not against any other player, but he's the number one recruit in America. He is from Georgia, and he could go to any SEC program, and he's going to go to Florida State, and he decides instead to go to Jackson State and take this leap of faith with Deion Sanders and go play FCS, HBCU football. Not that there'd be a even if he had gone to whatever the top team in Montana or North Dakota, it'd still be like you're going down a level. Deion is literally talking about how we don't have great facilities. We don't have enough for this. We don't have enough for that. And he goes and says, I'm going to make that statement that I can go play at an HBCU and the best talent in this country can go to those types of schools. And it's not just I have to go to Georgia or Alabama or Florida State. Even if you don't support those schools or you don't have any ties, like that's a great statement. Like, what an interesting, fascinating move for someone to make. And then, all right, now we're following Prime. He probably figured Prime would get a job, but you didn't know. And maybe he was going to transfer anyway. I don't know. And then he goes to Colorado, and here he is. It's a great story, regardless of whether there was another really good player.
Well, I think about this. It is remarkable of the decisions that Travis Hunter made to start his career at Jackson State. And I think about, like, maybe 10 years from now or even 20 years from now, when he's playing in the NFL or has completed his NFL career as, you know, whatever, an all-star, you know, record setter maybe. And people will look back at his college career, you know, people that are probably even younger than us, and go, whoa, wait a second, he played at Jackson State, you know, and people are going to be like scratching their heads like, well, that's crazy, right? You know, and it is, it's pretty cool. And Dan, you know, segueing over into Chris Vanini of The Athletic put this down. I know you had retweeted it. It's 8 of the 9 Heisman vote getters started at the Group of 5 or FCS level, or at least are still there, some of them. You know, Hunter with Jackson State, Ashton Jeanty, obviously still at Boise, completed his career there. Dylan Gabriel, UCF. Cam Ward, Incarnate Word. Cam Scataboo, Sacramento State, two FCS teams there. Bryson Daly, obviously Army. Shador Sanders, Jackson State, and Curtis Rourke of Indiana, who started at Ohio. So, you know, it's, and I think, Dan, you made a good point, and you make it quite often, is the transfer portal and the rules around immediate eligibility to transfers that got instituted, 4 or 5 years ago, whenever that was, has given the ability to players who were overlooked or maybe underdeveloped in high school to then be developed in college and get to a level that they can move up in a way. And I think we're starting to see, and I'll turn to John Summerall at Tulane, the coach at Tulane, for this example. His quarterback just left and will go to Duke. And I know that's not like a huge level up, but it is a level up into the ACC. And John Summerall was celebrating it on Twitter, his quarterback's move. And we said that, I remember last year, we talked on the pod about, should that need to be the approach? This is a promotional game now, and you should celebrate your transfers. If they've done enough for you, right, and you've developed them. I know there's a lot of anger out there. We develop these guys, we recruit these guys, we find them, and then they leave us. And I get the anger behind that and the frustration. But maybe we should start to more celebrate this and know this is the way. Don't fight against it. Like, this is what's going to happen is this promotional idea. So that was cool from John Summerall. And it's not anything too new. I remember quoting Jamie Chadwell maybe back in the spring for a story. I think we talked about it on the pod. And he said the same thing to me about, hey, I get it. This is what it is nowadays. And if I can go somewhere and go to the next level as a coach, my players can do it too. So you see most of these guys on the Heisman front vote getter list did do that.
Yeah, I think that's not just going to be something for coaches to celebrate, but to sell. You can come here and come to Tulane, and you know, we hope you do great. And if you like it here and you want to stay, that's awesome. But if that, we're a leaping pad for your next school, that's okay too. You know, I think that it can help you get guys that way. The other thing I would say too about, I mean, that stat is fascinating about how many started at a quote unquote lower level. This is a lot of pandemic recruits. And we said at the time, we thought there'd be a lot of misses and a lot of miscalculations. And I think that has played out where players that maybe just didn't get enough looks went on to prove themselves and then jump up to a higher level and become national stars.
That's a good point, because I was trying to go through the list and thinking about this. It's like, this is an amazing stat. 8 of the top 10, 8 of the top 9. Only Tyler Warren at Penn State, who finished 7th, and Kyle McCord, who finished 10th at Syracuse, and he's a transfer, but he started at Ohio State, were high-level recruits. or went to those schools. Now, it is skewed because Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter could have been power four or five recruits. They chose to play at Jackson State. So it's a little skewed there. Because I was like, what is this? Is there something about this hunger that a guy develops? We've seen in the NFL forever, you know, these kids come from all different schools and they make it, right? And now you have that chance to move up quicker. So I was kind of trying to consider it because it just seems like this might be a, you know, is this an aberration? Is this a trend? I would even say a guy who probably deserved to be in the top 10 or get votes was Harold Fannin Jr., the tight end from Bowling Green, who has better numbers than Tyler Warren. Incredible season. It had a 100 catches as a tight end. He's the number one tight end probably, or he's going to go high in these draft boards. Mel Kiper's got him as a, you know, serious first round possible guy. And he was at Bowling Green. He had 1,300 yards. He had 137 yards against Penn State. Like, he put up numbers against guys, and he was a late bloomer. He's a junior. No one really was recruiting him out of Canton, Ohio. So there's another guy who probably could have been on this list. But I agree with you, Ross, on it's the framing, right? And this has always been my thing, is we hear these guys who are leaving the smaller program, they're quitters. Right. There's no loyalty. This is what coaches were saying, and not just the coaches at the schools, but some of them, but then the kind of the retired coaches who kind of are the, let me tell you what coaches are thinking guy on in the media, and they're quitters. There's no loyalty to who developed them. They're just jumping to the highest bidder, the money or whatever it is. And I was always like, if that's your kid, you'd be so proud of him, right? Maybe you stay like Ashton Gentry. He did. And Boise State put together an incredible package, and they're going to be able to sell and recruit kids and say, look, come here. You finished second in the damn Heisman, a Boise State player. And we gave him enough money that he wanted to stay, and we're such a good place that he was like, I want to stay. And that's awesome. But other kids got their chance. They got in. If your kid is over, you're like, man, my kid's better than this. The SEC should be looking at him. And all I got is a Sun Belt offer. And we're not real happy about that. And he says, look, kid, go work hard. And they did. And then someone says, hey, I want you. And now, boom, I finished this in the Heisman race. And it's the Indiana football story, right? You guys overlooked us. And it's their failure. The NFL draft, with all of the money and all the hyper focus on a very small number of prospects, gets it wrong nonstop, right? So, of course, this recruiting process is going to get it wrong a lot, because there's thousands of kids and there's no way, there's no combine like thing. It's just too hard. So I look at these guys that move up, and maybe we're going to start seeing the framing of this in a different way. And people, I hope, start seeing the portal as a different thing, as a positive for college football, because I can't sit there and be like, you know, Cam Ward, this is terrible. You went from Incarnate Word to Washington State to Miami, and by all accounts, you're a terrific kid, and you made a bunch of money, and you played hard, and you're the fourth best player in America. That's great. No, you should have stayed at Incarnate Word, because no one saw what you were worth back in when you were 17. That doesn't make sense to me. So I love this story. I get the portal has some headaches, but I think this is the American success story. When you take whatever station you are given and you go prove people wrong, that's a powerful story, and something we, you know, almost everybody in this country tries to aspire to. And instead, what we've been hearing for 3 or 4 years is how horrible it is and how horrible these people are.
College football is a complaining culture. There's a lot of complaining.
Yeah. And you think about some of these players, like that were started at the FCS level, they would have likely, right, even without the transfer rule and stuff, they would have probably moved up. But I don't know that a lot of these players would have moved from, moved within FBS. I mean, I sat down with Curtis Rourke at Indiana, and he kind of acted like, you know, if the path wasn't there to play immediately, that he might not be playing football right now, right? Cam Ward maybe would have gone from Washington State to the NFL if not for the transfer portal, but NIL. Legal paying players.
That's right? The other part.
And that's another piece of this, absolutely, where players are staying. And then Boise, you know, you mentioned Ashton Jeanty turning down a lot of offers over the offseason to stay at Boise. I ran into Jeremiah Dickey, the athletic director at Boise in Vegas. He was there, and he's like a proud papa. And he mentioned to me, sitting down for coffee with him, he mentioned to me that, you know, they certainly didn't pay him what a lot of other schools were offering. He decided to stay for much less money. And notice, Dan, and people made a big deal out of this on social media on Friday, is, you know, Ashton Jeanty of the four finalists was the only one to wear like school colors and school logos for his photo shoot in Times Square. And I think he gave a great interview afterward about how, hey, I owe a lot to Boise. There's a connection there to the school and the culture that probably led him to stay there and take less money. And I think that is probably going to be something in the future that coaches should think about. You know, if you want to keep your players and you can't necessarily afford in the rev share world to pay them with other bigger blue bloods can pay them, you better have a good relationship with your player, and they better have a good relationship with their school, and they better like it, and you better have a nice, good culture, because that is going to be big moving forward on can you keep your players with something other than money?
Yeah. And he will benefit financially. He was smart enough, and I'm sure Boise pointed this out. Like, Ashton Jeanty is a legend in Boise, Idaho, forever.
Set for life.
Set for life. He is a legend. And I expect him to have a wonderful NFL career, but if he comes back and he wants to work at the school, or he wants to have a car dealership, or he wants to do this, or he wants to do that, or he just wants to come back every once in a while and sign jerseys, there is a massive financial advantage and business advantage for being that important at a school. If he had gone, nothing against Ashton Jeanty, because he is a wonderful, wonderful player, but had he gone to Alabama, he's another guy. They got a whole bunch. You go to the Heisman house, there's a whole bunch. You look at Doug Flutie in Boston College, right? Doug Flutie's still like, if you can do it at this place, you are forever that hero. And that has financial benefits too. So you sell different parts of it. And I agree with the part of like, hey, the money got some of these guys back. I love watching Dylan Gabriel play football. You know, I don't know. Maybe he's not playing, or maybe he's holding the clipboard in the NFL. I don't know what he's doing. But there's such a different framing if you step back and take a look. And we got through 4 or 5 years of, you know, I think the worm is turning on a lot of these things. The players just saw this, boom, negative, 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 negative. We got to do something. This is horrible. And then you look and go, I don't know, man. I saw a lot of really cool stuff there. I saw a lot of really cool players and great stories. And I don't look at Deion Sanders and go, oh, this is mercenary. And you got Bill. Remember, it was all nobody would want to coach. That was always a garbage. That, you know, these guys are fleeing the sport. They don't want to coach the sport anymore. It's chaotic. And it's like 800 people apply for the job the Boston College coach went to become a Bill freaking Belichick's like, I'll do it.
Yeah. That's right.
He was hosting a recruit this weekend, Dan, a quarterback recruit.
He got him. That's right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Commit. Yeah.
Bryce Baker. Yeah. First guy. Signed. He's going to sign his letter. He was already committed, but top 100 recruit. So I don't know. This is a really interesting. I cannot imagine that we're going to have 8 out of 10 from FCS and Group of Five again. But maybe it's no longer going to be this huge surprise when it's 4 or 5 or Jeanty may have really he didn't break the. I don't know if the proper term is, you know, glass ceiling. I think that's probably for more important things than winning a Heisman from the Group of Five. But he changed perceptions for a lot of people and voted. 309 votes for a Boise State. He didn't get all the way there, man, but you did an incredible thing getting that far. So, all right, we will be back after this. All right, the Army-Navy game was a classic. Navy upsets Army, came in ranked 22nd, 31-13. All the usual pomp and circumstance, and one of the great traditions in college football. Black Knights finish 11-2, Navy midshipmen 9-3. Great to see these two teams. I know both of you visited their campuses this year and talked about also the changing nature, and maybe there's an advantage to having this continuity of players. But great season by both. We salute them all. Pat, your thoughts on the Army-Navy game and then maybe what's going on with Army going forward?
Yeah, I mean, congratulations to Navy. Played a great game. Had kind of been in the shadow of Army as the season wore on. But Blake Horvath, quarterback there, is really good. Their offensive scheme is very creative. It's a little more hybrid, like option spread, some other stuff than just your traditional Service Academy option. And so great win for them. And Army loses the game and loses a bowl opponent when Marshall just flat punked out of the Independence Bowl. And they opted out, said they are not going to play. And now the Independence Bowl, which has hustled for 50 years to stay in business, had to go hustle some more and get Louisiana Tech at 5-7 to step in and take Marshall's place so that they could play the game. So good for Louisiana Tech, local area in the area there, Ruston, Shreveport, helping the game out, and they get another game to play. And I'm disgusted by Marshall here and the response from people to this. They have 28 players in the portal. That is a lot. They have a coaching change, so they have staff turnover. You still can play the game. They accepted the bid last Sunday. 5 days later, 6 days later, Ross broke it that they are not would not play in the Eye Bowl. And the immediate deductions out there, people were, well, you know, this is the portal's fault. It's the NCAA's fault for setting this up. Okay. Look, I am not, I've said for a long time, one-time free transfer. After that, you need to sit out. So they changed that rule. Who changed it? The courts. This is a legal decision that having players sit out is no longer viable. So this is a court issue. It is not the NCAA saying, oh, everybody can just transfer all the time. Their own rules got slapped back at them. This is not NIL is ruining college football. Okay? This is Marshall with 14 out of 22 starters from winning the Sun Belt Championship are still on the roster, according to what I have seen. 14 out of 22. 47 out of the 62 who played in the Sun Belt Championship are still on the roster. You can go play the damn game. Show up. You said you were going to play. You can go play. I don't know how many of those 47 would have liked to play another game, but I would bet probably a pretty good number of them did. Would have. Bail out on a game you said you would play to put the Independence Bowl in that position to embarrass the Sun Belt Conference, I thought was a lame, weak move. And I tell you what, if I were the Sun Belt and if I were a bowl rep, I would be like, I don't think we want Marshall around in going forward. If that's the way you're going to be, no thank you.
Saturday was pretty crazy for this situation because it unfolded as Army-Navy game was about to start, and the an Army does have a role in kind of who they play, who they're going to play. The NCAA usually goes through, you know, the APR rankings of 5 and 7 teams, and the highest one gets a choice. Then they go to the second one, third one. They go down the list to get a replacement. That's kind of how it usually works. And if Marshall had earlier, you know, even a week ago, come out and said they weren't going to play, it would have opened the door, Dan, for a power conference team to play Army in a bowl game, which I think everybody would have loved to see. You know, you had the Wisconsin's, UCLA, Cincinnati, Auburn. Those were some of the options that were ranked high enough in the APR. But it's so late. A lot of kids aren't even on campus at some of these schools anymore. you know, they're going through coaching changes, all this stuff. They just didn't expect to be in a bowl that's in less than 2 weeks, I think now, 13 days away. And so a lot of them declined, I think, to fill the void there and replace them. And so they got Louisiana Tech, which is just down the road, and Ruston a lot easier for them to make the trip over and the travel over. But I really do. I wish a few days ago Marshall would have made this decision so we could see an Army versus Wisconsin or Army versus Cincinnati or something, you know, Army versus UCLA. That would have been great. It's an unfortunate timing situation. And as Pat said, there's probably more than a few people out there that feel the same way of, wait, like you can't bail on this game. You said you would play. There was a mad scramble on Saturday, I think, to figure out what to do, because like I said earlier, Army does have a role in, you know, who they would play in this game after they get down the list of APR rankings. And, you know, one of those that was considered is Air Force, because Air Force was high on that APR list. But obviously, because of things with the commander-in-chief stuff, from what I understand, that was part of the hang-up there and not impacting the result of an already completed, you know, the commander-in-chief sort of thing. So, that's where we are. And La Tech will fill the void there. It's going to launch a conversation that's really been had now for a couple of years of, what do we do about the bowls and what do we do about the portal at this time and the coaching changes all happening at one time. And you saw over the weekend in Las Vegas, or last week in Las Vegas, a lot of the commissioners and some of the athletic directors did. This was a topic of discussion, is the future of the bowls in a world, in an expanded playoff world, where the portal in the coaching changes really impacts some of these games. And I think, Dan, starting in 2026, right, most of the bowl contracts come up after the 2025 bowl games next year. And I'm just going to say, you are going to see some significant changes on how the bowl, how especially the power conferences treat and play in bowl games. I expect that to happen.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that this happened. I think Marshall certainly should have bailed out earlier. The timing is just a mess. I don't know what to do. I don't know how you make this work. I mean, you can't sit there and tell kids, all right, we can't have the transfer portal until May, and you try to make people go to college where they don't want to go, or coaches may not want them, or like it's such a hard thing, and it's unfortunate. My opposition to the bowls is how they control the playoff and block the playoff. It's not about the bowls. I love the independence. The more football getting played, the better. We've always celebrated all the small games on this podcast, and I've always written that, and communities like the Independence Bowl, the Sun Bowl, there's some of those old school bowls. Those are not big fat cat operations. Those are, you know, parts of the community fabric. And hey, man, when else do we talk in Shreveport, right? Just doesn't come up a whole lot. And so you get a few hours of that. I think they did the game in Montgomery Saturday night. It's unfortunate. I don't know. I think Pat is right. This is more of an individual thing, but it's hard because, yeah, like you said, like, okay, Wisconsin, maybe Wisconsin would have been a good choice for that game. They played on November 27th. That was the end of the season. Like, you all of a sudden going to call everyone on the 15th and be like, everybody get over here, right? Or they're finishing, you know, it's just it changes the dynamic, and how do you make these fit are going to be definitely going to be a challenge for every last bit of this.
Yeah. I mean, look, it is. It's a mess. I'm not dismissing the amount of complication and difficulty that the timing of the portal and the timing of coaching changes creates. But that's the world we live in, and the schools have to adapt to it, and they have for the most part. They do, and you can't just on Sunday say, yeah, we're happy to go to the Independence Bowl, and then come back 6 days later and say, oh, no, never mind. You got enough guys to play. Figure it out. Get your ass to Shreveport.
Get, that's a good quote. Get your ass to Shreveport. Said nobody ever.
Well, actually, probably how you get people to go to Shreveport. It's not like, I mean, it's not like, I don't want to pick on Shreveport, but it's not like people are like, where are you going for vacation this? You going on vacation after? Yeah, me and the family. Where are you going? Shreveport. Like, okay. It's not Miami. I mean,
no.
It's like, oh, man, you got family there, or you just really like that casino? And, you know,
I've spent a mini night in Shreveport. I know. Great casinos.
Yeah, I've been there. Good, great barbecue. Good
food.
I know.
And you know what they're best at? There is a little dive daiquiri bar right underneath the interstate. Grimy, divey. It's wonderful. It's a great place.
Come on, kids. Get in the car.
Great spot. Yep. We're going to get overpass daiquiris at the dive bar.
It's always sleeting in Shreveport was my wild line. The Independence Bowl has never been played in anything other than sleet. Okay, speaking of weather, I've got the weather reports for the first four playoff games. We're going to break these games down a little bit after the break. But before we get to the break, I think probably perfectly the opening first on-campus college football playoff game ever is going to be in South Bend next Friday night, and it is, the weather report is 30 degrees and snow all night.
Woo, 50%
chance of snow at 7, at 8, at 9. It's going to snow.
Oh, my goodness. Bundle up.
It is going to snow on that Golden Dome. Touchdown, Jesus. He ain't shoveling. He's got his arms up. You're saying Jesus can't shovel?
He has many disciples who will shovel for him.
He will clear. He will split. It'll be perfectly manicured on that campus. Don't worry. Snow removal will be. They must do an elite job over there. Maybe it is touchdown Jesus. Maybe it is the grounds crew. Whatever. It is going to snow on the first game. Indiana, Notre Dame. It's supposed to snow Friday night. Next day, high noon in State College, high of 31. Mm. Partly sunny. 30% chance of snow during the day. Seems like, you know, maybe a little early, the snow maybe won't be going on, but during the game, we'll see. It's 5-6 days out.
Yep.
4 o'clock on Saturday is the game I'm at. It's going to be rough. Sunny with a high of 62. Ah, it's going to be tough for me. It's going to be tough for me, but it's dropping to 42 at night, Pat. And I mean, that's sweater weather, man.
Oh, no.
That's, yeah.
What will they do?
Yeah, what are those people in Austin going to do?
I have advocated
to wear something other than flip-flops to the game.
I have advocated for snow football playoff games for like 2 decades, and I am going to Austin because I'm smart.
And the Southern boy is going to South Bend to fight 30-degree and snow.
You chose it. You chose it. I gave Ross first pick, and he wanted it. I'll be okay. I'll get a little taco or something down there.
Yeah,
be okay. I'll persevere through that. I mean, it's only. I mean, it could be 46 by the time I leave that stadium. It's tough. Dear. Finally, 8 o'clock, Columbus, Ohio, clear and 20 degrees.
Woo! That's where I'll be.
Whew.
So
yeah, so that's going to be cold, but supposed to be clear. When you have clear skies, that temperature can drop quickly because there's no you need the clouds to kind of keep the earth heat back in.
Is that right?
That is true.
Weatherman.
Yeah. Huh. You don't want the coldest nights are when there's no clouds.
Really?
So 20, I don't know. So Tennessee, I don't know whether this is going to be as big a deal as people think. Like this whole Tennessee, they're going to have to play. Look, it gets cold at Knoxville too.
Yeah.
It'll be all right. Yeah. It gets cold in SMU. You know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But it is weather is going to be a big story this week. I think the weather, Doppler, College Football Inquirer, I think we buy out a Doppler machine. Ross, one-time budding meteorologist. What
that's
do you know?
That's right.
You know how to run a Doppler? What the hell is a Doppler? Is that a real thing or is that something
that's just
I didn't get that
like
far down the meteorologist major.
Doppler 7.
Oh, okay.
It's like it might get, and then they never are right. So I don't know what this Doppler. I mean, like, I got a better shot at the guys deciding whether something's targeting is usually more accurate than the. Pat, what do you think?
Can't wait. No, this has been the like the fever dream for people from the Midwest, upper Midwest, wherever, forever. We're gonna get those people up here in December. Then we'll see what they're made of. Come play in our weather. Yeah, you're getting the weather. We're getting the chance. And so I think it's fantastic. It's going to be, especially if it's a snow game in South Bend, I mean, the TV, the visuals just going to be awesome. The fans are going to show up. It doesn't matter what the weather is from that standpoint. So I am fired up to see it. You know, hey, I love going to the Rose Bowl and being out there when it's 70 and perfect. And I love going to, you know, hang out in Scottsdale before the Fiesta Bowl. Back when that was outdoors, that was also the same thing. But I want to see this. I want to be part of it. This is going to be fantastic.
You'll be all right, Ross?
I mean, the press box is closed, right?
Yes.
Isn't it closed?
Yes, it's okay. Closed.
Yeah, so there's at least... there's at least that, but I'll be bundled up. I'll be bundled up in, you know, my quick personal story. My dad, who's a former high school football coach, who you both know very well,
Coach Dell.
He grew up a Notre Dame fan, right? Catholic. We're from the New Orleans area, and we all kind of grew up Notre Dame fans, especially him, raised in a big Catholic family. And it's been 30 or 40 years since he's been to a Notre Dame game. So his son is flying him up. To South Bend, awesome. So he can go to. I bought him a ticket already, and so he can go to a Notre Dame game for the first time in 40 years or so. So that'll be cool. I think he still has his Notre Dame starter jacket, like literally like 40 year old starter jacket. So I'm hoping he wears that.
Dude, those things were sweet.
Coach Dell,
he still got it, rocking it back in the day.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Turning heads.
And if it's been 40 years, then he was going when Jerry Faust was the coach. Mm-hmm. So he needs a refresher. But
I think it was Lou. I think it was Lou. I'll have to ask him. I thought it was Lou, but so
kind of late 80s with the starter jacket.
Yeah, late 80s. Yeah, it may have been.
Coach Dell with the fashion.
Yeah. There you go. I think he's got a old Saint starter jacket too, Dan. The starter jacket was a big thing in the house. A variety of teams. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that is awesome. See, we're making memories.
Yeah. There you go.
Making memories.
Tremendous.
All right. We're going to talk these four games right after this. Games are coming. Let's break these down quickly. We did a little last week, but let's do it. We'll talk about these all week, but let's start Indiana Notre Dame. Pat, what are your early thoughts here on this game as we're now 1 week out? We can start to really get into it.
I can't wait for the Indiana State Championship. It's going to be fantastic. Ticket prices tell me that Indiana fans are doing everything they can to get in the stadium because this is your once in a lifetime, you know, and you can get there easily. A lot of them live in that area. So I think the big thing, you know, Indiana has to handle the moment. And if you remember the start of the Ohio State game, which was their last handle the moment task, they did. And then the punt team just fell apart on them, and it kind of snowballed from there. But Notre Dame, punishing dominant defense, very good running game, okay passing game. You know, I think that if Notre Dame can establish the line of scrimmage, it's going to be a long night for Indiana. But Indiana's pretty good against the run. And so I think if you can force Riley Leonard to have to do a lot, that might play into Indiana's hands there. But the other thing, of course, I mean, Indiana's offensive line and quarterback did not handle pressure at all against Ohio State. They've got to do better in that area because Notre Dame with Al Golden's not a big pressure guy, but you know, you watch the film and he's going to dial it up on him.
That was going to be my point is can Indiana handle the pressure because they did not. In Columbus. Well, they did the first drive and that went really well. That first drive, it was probably clearly scripted, march down the field and score a touchdown and take a 7-0 lead against Ohio State. And then, gosh, it just everything completely changed, and all of a sudden they couldn't block anybody. And that's what sticks out to me is that's the big matchup to watch is can they block someone? Can they give Curtis Rourke time? And given the weather, right, snowy and so cold, you know, throwing the ball in this sort of climate and weather can be an issue. So that would be certainly one of my concerns. Is their passing game and the footing for receivers, the footing for the quarterback. I kind of give the nod to Notre Dame and kind of how they, you know, what they lean on as a really solid defense and kind of a team that, you know, runs the ball and leans on the run a lot. Certainly give them the edge in this one. Dan, we mentioned ticket prices. I know you kind of researched some ticket prices last week. I'm assuming they're all probably still the same. And the Notre Dame Indiana ticket, average ticket or cheapest ticket, get in price, as they might say, was $1,000 just a few days ago. And that led it all the other games. The next one was around $350 for Tennessee, Ohio State, $300 for Clemson and Texas, and then $120 or so for SMU, Penn State. So that this is a hot ticket. Going to be pretty exciting, incredible atmosphere.
It's going to be electric, just cold, electric blanket. Yeah. Look at if you can throw the ball with any kind of accuracy, it helps the passing game in the snow because the cuts that the wide receiver knows where he's going, and so the little up and out becomes a deadly. There weren't a whole lot of players. You think about some of the NFL quarterbacks that have done this that have that accuracy. Brady, Rodgers, like those guys were devastating in cold weather and in snow. But you have to have that accuracy. If you don't, forget it. Going to be a fascinating game. All right, SMU, lot to prove. I think the whole playoff controversy, should they have gotten in, all that, I think that's a motivating factor for them. They're going to go up to Penn State. That, you know, we don't know quite the weather there. It also gets really cold in Dallas sometimes, but this is going to be, I don't think the weather's going to be that huge of a factor, I guess would be my thing, but, Penn State might be, both coming off a loss though. So although Penn State may feel better about their loss, I don't know. What are we going to get, Pat?
Yeah, I think you're right. It's a major kind of prove it moment for SMU. And I think they've proved a lot this year, but getting in the playoff now, you need to show up for this game. And this is the one that will be played on natural grass. We'll see what kind of shape the stadium's in there, Beaver Stadium, the turf there. But, you know, if SMU can make plays, the way, like Kevin Jennings, the plays that he was making in the second half against Clemson were just incredible. If he can freelance and make plays, because Abdul Carter will be chasing him and some other guys will be chasing him. So if he can freelance and make plays and not turn it over, I think they got a chance to be in this. Going to have to stop a dedicated running game from Penn State. They got two good backs and they will run the ball until you stop them. And, the Penn State, the whole offense, I think, has just gotten better as the season's gone along there. So they're an improved product. And I expect that atmosphere to be, 100,000 plus, really loud and involved and make it difficult for SMU.
Yeah, I kind of compare Penn State and Notre Dame as far as how they play, built on defense and running the football and kind of built for this kind of weather. But Kevin Jennings is the wild card. Pat mentioned it. You know, Pat and I were sitting next to each other at the ACC championship game, and I think I said this on the pod last time, but like every time you looked up, the kid was making an incredible play, running around, escaping a tackle, and like with a flick of the wrist, making an incredible pass for a first down or a touchdown. So, you know, he does those kind of magic things that we saw in the second half against Clemson. Penn State would be in trouble. He's kind of the wild card for me. Can do it on the ground too. Their defensive front at SMU, pretty salty too, right? A lot of those guys were from Miami, transfers that transferred in. Pretty impressive group. So I'm kind of looking for this one to be be entertaining, be maybe a little tight. I thought the spread, I think, is like 8 or 8.5 or something like that. Seemed a little high for a playoff game, but then again, SMU is down 17 points to Clemson at halftime, so I get it.
Zombo Dabo gets a second lease on the season, or third, kind of the third. Little old Clemson, nothing to lose. Snuck in this old playoff, heading down to Texas, which who the heck knows? No ranked wins.
But
look pretty good.
But yeah, between them both?
No.
Clemson got a maybe. Ranked win? Yeah. Zero ranked wins in the game. I think that's right. I think that might be right. It's crazy. Well,
let's expand
this
thing.
Right.
Let's expand it.
Let's expand it. Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, we're good. We've done enough on that. It's a positive day. It's a beautiful. It's a Sunday.
Yeah, we'll keep it positive.
Yeah, we're having a nice day here.
That's right. Well, I guess a ranked win. I'm sorry. Yeah. Clemson.
They beat
over SMU.
So SMU would be there. Yeah. I mean, regular season.
Oh, there you go. What are we talking about?
No ranked wins in the regular season. But yeah, they did beat SMU, who finishes.
So
the
what's
season.
Ross? What's going to happen in the game?
Well, it's going to be nice and toasty out here. I'm aware. 7-62, yep. So that sounds good.
Tacos.
I speak of ranked wins, right? I think this would be an interesting test for Texas because they're two games against top 25, top 10, obviously, programs in Georgia. They lost them both. I think there's some questions for Texas. And right now there's some swirling questions for their quarterback too. Quinn Ewers, his future, but not only his future, but in general, his play, right? Can he do enough? And man, I'm telling you, of all the first round matchups, you know, Texas as the 5 seed was supposed to draw the best matchup, you would think, as the 12 seed. But again, because of the first round bye rule with the champions getting the bye, the seeding was a little bit messed up, kind of a little wonky. And as the 5th seed, again, you're supposed to get probably the best matchup. This is the worst matchup. Like I would not want to play Clemson, who probably should have beat or was right there with South Carolina, who's playing as good as anybody, and then beat SMU and has that there as their coach, one of the two in the country who've won multiple national championships, and who obviously came in with a great game plan against SMU, certainly in the first half. Like I would want to play them. So this is not the most ideal matchup for Texas. And again, I think this is a really tight, fun game. And Cade Klubnik, a Clemson quarterback, I know Texas' defensive front can be pretty salty. But Cade has been on fire lately, and to me this is a fun one of ACC versus SEC, which these two leagues have kind of gone back and forth on a lot, and their commissioners too, and their administrators back and forth with each other on the strength. They obviously have a lot of rivalry games with one another, so this is a fascinating one. I think you might be going to what I think is the most intriguing, tightest one, Dan.
Warmest.
Yep. And I think Dan invented a word for us there, though. Zombo Dabo.
There we go. Yeah.
Is that how I pronounced it? I didn't even say zombie.
Said Zombo. Yeah.
Zombo. Oh, gosh. I can't even pronounce zombie.
We're working with you.
Well, yeah.
Anyway. I mean, this is fascinating, and I think it is a big stage for Quinn Ewers, who sometimes plays very well and sometimes makes major mistakes. His QB rating the last 4 games hadn't been very good. You know, since they lit up Florida was in disarray. Arkansas, Kentucky, Texas A&M, Georgia, he's just kind of been, he makes some really nice throws and then he makes some bad throws and interception, a fumble, whatever. So I think he needs to show up and play well. Cade Klubnik, Texas kid, left the state to go to Clemson, so big homecoming stage for him. I mean, I agree with what Ross said, where I would not want to see Dabo Swinney in this game. I just don't. Zombo Dabo is going to be a headache. Like, Steve Sarkisian is going to be sitting there saying, he's going to have a little bit of the tight, you know what, I think, coming into this game.
Zombie Dabo. Well, whatever. Zombo. Oh, brother. So, Ohio State, 8 p.m. hosts Tennessee. This is a 8-9 game. Fascinating game. We've talked a lot about which Buckeye team is going to show up. The one we saw all year, or most of the year, or the one against Michigan. And we don't know. But what we do know is I think a lot of Vol fans are going to show up. This is a fascinating development. Ohio Stadium seats 102,780. 3,500 of those tickets were allocated for Tennessee. And then they put out a code that Ohio State fans were supposed to use to be able to purchase tickets in a pre-sale. So if you were on the pre-sale list to get this done. Unfortunately for Ohio State, not the highest security. It wasn't like password or 1234. It was OSUFB. That was it. That was the code, and it got out to the Vol fans. And Tennessee fans bought a ton of tickets. We don't know how many. Ticket brokers bought a lot of tickets, which means those tickets are going on the secondary market, which means they are available to both Ohio State and Tennessee fans. So the idea of the usual overwhelming pro-Ohio State crowd, and we can talk about how many of those would be pro at this point, but they're going to be a lot of orange in that building because you crack that door, Tennessee's coming through. I don't have any doubt. Volunteer fans are like, OSUFB, boom, I'm there. Ross, what happened?
Yeah, there's, I think maybe the university president there at Ohio State said publicly, talked a little bit about this publicly and said he expected maybe 20,000. I think he said 20,000 Tennessee fans in the stands. So that's a lot of orange. I remember us talking about in the last pod. It's not that long of a trip, and the Vols would make that trip. But 20,000, that would be pretty incredible. You know, these are two. What fascinates me about this one is the kind of the off the field dynamic to this one, Dan, is these are two of the biggest, most successful and lucrative collectives in probably rosters in the game right now. What's funny is the winner plays Oregon, which is also right in the mix as three of the probably top five collectives in value for their roster in college football. So two extraordinarily talented teams. One of them, obviously, that Ohio State that has probably more of the pressure. Tennessee, this one just feels like a game where Tennessee can and should play pretty free. And that's probably not good for the Buckeyes, right? I think the Michigan game felt that way. We all know how that turned out. I mean, every game this year has felt like just brutal pressure-wise for Ryan Day and Ohio State. And this one, more than the next one, just feels like it as well. But they're talented. They're playing at home, and it's going to be cold. And I can't see the talent. And look, Tennessee's talented too. We talked about it. I mean, they've got a lot of money over there too, and their front has been incredible as well. I just see this one being a low score, ugly game where it comes down to the final play. And God bless Ryan Day if he loses.
Big Orange going to be rolling up I-75 through Lexington, through Cincinnati, hang a right onto I-71, rolling into Columbus in large numbers and adding, yes, more pressure to the situation for Ohio State. To me, this, like, it's a lot of pressure on Ohio State's offense to produce. They're trying to run against a really good run defense. If they get stubborn about it like they did against Michigan, look out. But you got to get Will Howard. Will Howard can't make the mistakes he made against Michigan. You got elite receivers. You got to involve them. You got to turn this into more of a perimeter game, I think, and beat them on the outside. And we'll see if Will Howard and the offense is up to it. We'll see. I think, you know, Chip Kelly is not a dumb play caller. I don't know what happened against Michigan. I don't expect them to call a dumb game again. So I would expect a smarter game plan. If we'll see if they can execute it with that much pressure hanging on them.
All right. Just finally, an update on a People's Court, very famous People's Court we've been following, and that is whether a boneless chicken wing is allowed to have a bone in it. If you recall, also from the great state of Ohio, there was a lawsuit of a man who ordered some boneless chicken wings, bit into it, and found a bone. And a court in Ohio ruled that boneless is really more of a cooking style. And so he was not allowed to, you have no reasonable expectation there isn't a bone in there. It went to the Ohio Supreme Court. They have denied a request to reconsider their ruling. Or maybe it was them who had it. I don't know who came up with this. But they denied it. Even though there is a argument that this was not correct and all that, but they said that it didn't merit like the appellate process more than that. It is the rare exception rather than the rule for this court to grant motions for reconsideration. Justice Patrick Fisher wrote in the majority opinion denying it. He doesn't want to re-argue the case. However, there was a dissent by Michael Donnelly, Melody Stewart, and Jennifer Brunner. I believe this has gone by partisan lines. I don't even know how this would be a partisan issue. This whole case confused me. Donnelly said, of course, they said this case received unprecedented media attention.
Imagine.
I mean, they rule on stuff all the time and no one pays any attention, right? I mean,
how often it really matters.
Yeah, but this one. And Donnelly wrote, the majority's opinion has been rightly subjected to ridicule, but to be sure, our jurisprudence is not directed by, I don't even know what that word is. I can't even say zombie. Anyway, it is settled law in Ohio. You order a boneless chicken wing, there might be a bone in it.
As I have said before, I mean, there really is no such thing as a boneless chicken wing. So if you're ordering those, you get what you get. I'm sorry. You know, it's basically pressed chicken meat thrown together. So I am a fan of traditional chicken wings. I think those are the way they should be eaten. And I think you go boneless, you takes your chances. And so I don't even know which side ended up winning this lawsuit, but
I fear even commenting because it's like people get mad, but apparently the Republicans are in say that there could be a bone in there and the Democrats say there can't. I don't understand how.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, thinking about the party platforms, I don't know how they
align
either way.
I would think this one would have had some mix, you know, maybe. But what? I don't know. But anyway, all you Tennessee fans, if you're coming up for the game and you stop and you order some boneless chicken wings,
look out.
Careful. So, go
Bones
Bucks.
Show up in the strangest places in Ohio.
Yeah. You never know. Go Buckeyes. All right. There you are. Boneless chicken wings. We'll be back Tuesday with more. Big week. Playoffs are here. Talk to you later.